Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. My name is Lisa Woodruff, and I'm a professional organizer and blogger in Cincinnati, Ohio. I want to help you get your home organized and help you organize life stages and unexpected events. So sit back, relax, and let's get organized. Oh, I am so excited to talk to you today. Today, we are going to start a long series on productivity, and this series will run every other Friday until I'm done talking about productivity, which could be a year, could be 2 years, could be the rest of my life. I have no idea. But we're going to keep talking about it until I have downloaded what I have in my brain into your brain so that you are a more productive person. Now, there are two kinds of people that will be listening to this podcast. One will be people like me that are already productive and they're just always looking for more and more productivity tips to become more productive. Like, it's addicting. And the other will be people who go, productivity, that's great. If I could get out of my pajamas one day, that would be like amazing. Productivity, whatever. Maybe someday, I don't know. And I want to say this is just like organizing your home. Everyone could be a more productive person, but it is exactly like organizing your home in that it happens in incremental, small steps. In your home, it's one drawer, one cabinet at a time. In your life, productivity is streamlining one task, adding one extra minute to your day, eliminating one more task from your day. And so today on the podcast, I've gone through some of the big thoughts I have about productivity, and I want to walk you through a couple of my stories and my general thoughts on productivity, because as you know, I really believe that change happens first in your mind. And for some of you, you'll listen to this podcast today and maybe 6 months from now and a year from now, and 2 years from now is when you'll actually start being more productive. But it is the thinking about being more productive that will happen first. So this is going to be a lot of like philosophical Lisa, I don't know, Dr. Lisa is talking now about all my thoughts about productivity. And to just really get your mind thinking in a completely different way about your time, about your tasks, and about what you're doing. And the first thing I want to say is we need to really slow down and set aside time to become productive, which seems counterproductive. Like, why would you take time out in order to become more productive? Isn't the idea to multiply your time? And that's true, but we need to slow down to get the order right of what we're doing, which will speed us up again. So if you have a list of 10 tasks to do and you do them all in order, that might not be the most productive way to do your tasks. So here's a little hint. When I get up in the morning, the first thing I think is, what people or machines can I get working for me before I start working for me? So I turn on the coffee machine so it's ready when I come back. I start the washing machine, I start the dishwasher. Then I go back and I make the coffee. So in that way, I'm not turning the coffee machine on, waiting for it to brew, and then brewing my coffee. In that amount of time, I've started the washing machine and the dishwasher. So I multiply my time in that way. Additionally, when I was in direct sales and now in my Organized 365 business, when I sit down to my computer, the very first thing I think is, okay, what does my assistant need today? What about my graphic designer, the person that helps me with the podcast? Hence why I'm recording the podcast right now, because she needs the podcast so she can get it up and ready on Friday. If I waited until Thursday night to record my podcast, I couldn't use my podcast editor to help me get that launched on Friday. So because I'm recording this podcast right now, I'm being productive because I'm going to be able to have her help me upload this podcast later. So sometimes we need to slow down and get our tasks in the right order, and then it will speed us up in how we get them done. Otherwise, we feel like hamsters on a wheel going faster and faster and getting nowhere. I'm sure everyone can relate to that. I hate days like that. I have less and less of them now. Or I feel like I'm going from task to task to task. I look at the list. I know I'm never going to get it done. I try to go faster and faster. And at the end of the day, I haven't even really accomplished anything I wanted to accomplish. So we cannot slow the world down. We're not going to get an extra day. We need to simplify our own lives and then stack our tasks to speed up our trajectory. So I love to say that I'm a multitasker, and my husband loves to say that that's been debunked. And there are all these studies out right now that show that multitasking does not exist. Like, you cannot multitask. It's physically not possible. What you're actually doing is task switching. And I've talked about this before on the podcast. So as I was starting this productivity series, I thought, okay, I don't like that answer. I don't like task switching, and I don't like the fact that there is not the ability to multitask, because I do think that I multiply my time and I get a lot more tasks done. So if I'm not allowed to use the word multitasking because it doesn't exist, I'm going to create my own word. So yesterday I created my own word. Maybe it's out there, maybe it's not, but I created it. It's a Lisa-ism, and it's called task stacking. So I don't think what I really do is multitask as much as I stack my tasks in a specific order in order to be as productive as possible. So there are daily tasks that I stack on a regular basis. There are seasonal tasks that I stack in those seasons in order to make those more productive. And what I do every weekend with the Sunday basket and planning my day the night before is I figure out the puzzle of how to stack the tasks that I have the next day in the most productive order possible. So I do task stacking, which is what I used to call multitasking. So that is a new term. Now, I was going to start this series by talking about the Sunday basket, and I'm not, for two reasons. Number one, if you're listening to this in the podcast, you just go back to episode 93 and I go through the Sunday basket in great detail, and I will link to that in the show notes of that episode. But the other reason is because so many of you are doing the Sunday basket and you are doing it successfully. Like, you are rocking it. And on Sundays when I say, show me a picture of your Sunday basket, you've done it. You understand it. You're past the 6-week learning curve. If you have not started the Sunday basket yet, it takes about 6 weeks to get used to putting all of the paper that comes into your life in one place all week. And then on Sunday, emptying that basket out, looking at every single piece of paper and saying, can this wait until next Sunday? If it can, great. If it can't, it stays out and it gets done this week. After you do that for a couple of weeks, you learn how to add slash pockets, and you take everything that you need for your family vacation, and that goes in one slash pocket. And everything that you need for graduation party, and that goes in one slash pocket. And everything that you need for the golf league, and that goes in one slash pocket. So you're not looking at 80 pieces of paper. You're looking at 15 new pieces of paper and 10 slash pockets. I won't even tell you how many slash pockets are in my Sunday basket. I'll tell you that next week. But you have one place where all of your actionable papers and projects go. And in 2 weeks, when I do Sunday Basket 102, which is going to be the next podcast in this productivity series, I'll tell you about how deep and how detailed and not detailed my Sunday basket is, and how I really have used it over the last decade to run my business, my home, everything. So you're already doing this. You're already slowing down, because on Sunday you have to slow down and set aside the time to do the Sunday basket. And I know that you're more productive because of it. I know you're not missing as many bills and papers and all of those important things that used to weigh on you. That weight has gone away, and it is freeing up some time in your life. So next, we're going to move on to step two, which is to be proactive versus reactive. Again, the Sunday basket is helping you become a more proactive person and a less reactive person. If you do not become proactive, life will happen to you and you will feel overworked, overwhelmed, and unfulfilled. I see it all the time when I am talking to people that are overworked, overwhelmed, and unfulfilled. I see it. Like, I hear it in their words, and I see it in their house, and I see it in their life. Other people are calling the shots at work. Other people are calling the shots at home. Other people are calling the shots in their kids' school and their kids' health and everything. And when I say, well, you don't have to take that pill that the doctor said to take, or, you know, you could tell them you want something else in your child's education. Like, you don't have to accept what they're telling you. People are so overworked and overwhelmed that they have stopped seeing the big picture. And if you feel this way, I did, I have an episode on depression where I couldn't see the big picture anymore. Like, I was just going through life like a little leaf floating down this stream, and I had no control over my life whatsoever. And I had to go on antidepressants for a while in order to gain my perspective, regain order of my life, and then be proactive again. So I think this balance between reacting to everything or being proactive really is a balance. You could be too proactive and too reactive, and we need to be somewhere in the middle. So doing the Sunday basket and figuring out what you want to do for your week is a proactive step. And as you start ordering your time that way, then you will be able to take the next proactive step and the next proactive step. Because it's not like if you don't do this, if you say, okay, I'm not going to be productive, it's not like you're going to have less to do on your to-do list. I think sometimes people don't set aside the time to do this because they think, oh good, I've got 5 minutes, I'm going to go watch TV, or I'm going to go read a book, or I'm going to go do something for me. Because you're so used to everyone demanding your time, your energy, your money, your everything, that when you have a second where you don't have something to do, what you want to do is nothing. But if you actually do something, if you actually do something proactive for yourself, like ordering your tasks, then you can eliminate the tasks. You can get out of the obligation that you're in financial or time-wise. You can make those choices and give yourself more time. And I'll show you over the course of this how this happens. So the bottom line is only you are in charge of you, and only you can make these changes. And even a small win is worth it. So I'm really happy to record this because I know some of you need to hear it, but I'm so used to being the girl that goes, you can do it. Empty out your silverware drawer. Yes, you can organize forks and spoons. Come on, we could do this together. Like your cheerleader. But there's almost a little bit of a Lisa smackdown in this, in that, you know, a lot of times we're so overwhelmed with our stuff. We're so overwhelmed with our time, where our money is going, the things that are happening around us. And I want to say, you know, you just have to take care of yourself. You have to stop and realize, or I realized, I can't change my kids. I can't change my husband. I can't change the world economy. I can't change politics. I can't change if the dog comes in or doesn't come in when I call his name. I probably could change that, but I haven't. I can only control me. I control my attitude. I could control my energy level based on what I eat and how much I sleep. I could control how I spend my time. I control what I choose to ignore and what I choose to look at. And so really, in this whole productivity series, we're not going to be talking about other people or getting a new job or moving a new place or buying this to help you with productivity. It's all internal work. It's all your mind. It's all thinking about how you do things. So here's a really good example for you. When I sat down to write my book this summer that I am writing right now, I said I was going to write it in 100 days. And after I started writing it, I realized that if it took me 100 days to write the book, it wouldn't release at the end of August, which is when I wanted it to release, which was 100 days later. I realized I actually had to write my book in 30 days because then I had to get an editor and do all of the promotion and everything that goes along with writing a book. I also did not factor into the fact that I needed an editor and I needed a coach because I hadn't done an Amazon number one bestseller book launch before, so I need a coach for that. I need a cover designer. I need someone to format the book. And then I decided last week that it's also going to be an Audible book. Mind you, I've tried reading my book out loud and not so good at it. Really not so good at it. But I put it on Facebook the other day and I said I was doing this and everybody was all excited, which I figured would be the case. You're listening to a podcast now, so wouldn't you like to listen to the book as opposed to read the book? Yeah, I figured that would be a logical, you know, thing. So I need to record an audiobook. But right now I have like bullet pointed notes in front of me and I'm just talking to you, talking to the pine tree. I'm not reading a script. Reading a script is totally different. So then somebody in the Facebook group said, what do you mean you can't read a book? You can record all these videos, you record podcasts, you do post, you do all this stuff, you can record an audiobook. And I was like, no, I'm really not good at it, but it's not going to stop me. I'm definitely going to do it. And now that you've heard this podcast, you'll probably realize the podcasts are better than the audiobook's going to be because it's me. I'm better in person. I'm even better live. Like if you throw questions at me, I get really animated, more animated than this. It's kind of fun to watch. But the more you make me follow a script, the less good I get because I don't know, I'm better on my feet. But another thing about this book is when I went to write the book, I thought this would be like everything, like the 40 weeks, one whole house in a book, or everything I know about organizing in a book. And I started trying to write that with the ADHD stories in there and the organizing 101 and the 40 weeks, one whole house and telling you about the different phases of life. And what I realized was it was a hot mess. I mean, like it was a hot mess. And in order to write a book, I have to be writing about one topic. And that frustrated me immediately because what I want to do is share everything I've already shared with you in one easy to buy book. But what I quickly realized was I'm going to be writing 7 or 8 books, 6 of them over the next 2 years and then probably more after that. But I know the 6 this year. So halfway through this book writing process, 2 weeks in, I realized, okay, another big problem with this book is if I were to start with a book on how ADHD affects home organization, I know that would sell. And I know that would sell to people who aren't even in listening to this podcast right now, because people would see that on Amazon and they'd be like, oh, I'm ADHD. Oh, I want to organize my house. And they would buy that book. And that's great because it will explain how your brain processes as an ADHD person, or all people have executive functionings in their brain, and how the executive functioning part of the brain affects home organization. I know you want that book. It's coming out May 31st of 2017. Put it on your calendar. I'm not sure if it's exactly that date, but end of May 2017. That's when that one will release. I was like, okay, I have to do something more basic. Let's do the Sunday Basket, which already is an ebook that you could buy right now, but let's beef it up and make it a real book, and let's call it Organization 101. I was like, okay, that would be great. I could release that book, but that book's already selling and people are already doing the organizing with the Sunday Basket. So that doesn't really help the people who need the book that I need to write right now. So Organizing 101, the Sunday Basket, it will release January 1st, 2017. So those are two of the books that are coming. And what I realized I needed to write was, I needed to write the book about how my organizing is different than everybody else's organizing out there. Not that it's like 100% unique and only follow Lisa. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is the way I teach organizing is different. I mean, I'm a different kind of organizer than other organizers are. And the thing that I've come across over the last year, the way that I think differently about organization is I view it in 4 different phases of life. I think organizing as a child and adolescent in your bedroom is different than the person who is downsizing their house in their 60s and 70s. And it is different. I mean, the way you look at your kitchen is different. How you look at your stuff is different when you're in these different seasons of life. So there are 4 seasons of life. First 20 years are childhood and adolescence. From 20 to 40, that's the accumulating years where you're adding houses and kids and cars and jobs and husbands and all these things. You're just adding, moving out of that childhood bedroom and creating this home and this family and this life. And then at 40, there's like a switch that goes in your brain and you go, whoa, okay, I like this, I don't like this, I like this, I don't like this. And you start editing everything that you did in those 2 decades, accumulating and deciding, you know what, I never liked that picture, it's out of here. And I would like to have more of those. And I'd actually like to live in a different city or whatever you decide. And from 40 to 60, you're raising middle school kids, you're excelling in your career. That's when 71% of women in the United States are actually in the workforce making money. It's the biggest time of the year where you won't be at home because you'll be making money. Even if you work from home, you won't be housekeeping, you'll be working. And so we don't have as much time at home as we usually do. And then over 60, that's when you start moving out of this survival phase, which is what I call the 40s and 50s, into the downsizing legacy phase, which is where you downsize your home, you downsize your stuff, you decide what you want to keep and what memories you want to pass on to the future generations. That's my thing. That's the thing that I realized I do when I go into people's homes and I organize them. I'm a generation translator. When mom is paying to have her daughter's home organized because the daughter's on bed rest with triplets, mom has an idea of how she wants that house organized and she's paying for it. And the daughter on bed rest has an idea of how she'd like to have that house function because it's her house. And I am there to make both happy. When we leave, it looks organized for mom, but the woman who's going to live in the house is happy with it and it's going to function how she needs it to happen with the triplets. I do that all the time. And even I do gender translation, you know, a husband and wife. Often during the consultation, a husband and wife will both be there. Only one is going to be with our team when we organize the house, or possibly they'll both be at work while we organize the house, but they have different wants and desires for that house. The husband has one thing he wants and the wife has one thing she wants. And it's my job to say, yes, that will happen. All that you just said will happen. We can make that happen. And we do it all the time. And so when I realized I could do it in person, how do I help you do that in the podcast, in the book? And the best way to help you do that is to explain to everyone what these four phases of life are, how they function. And anyway, I've gone way too far into depth on the book thing. I get excited. Okay, so that's the book. But when I talk about productivity, when I talk about slowing down to get ahead, what I'm saying is 2 years from now, I will have 6 books on the market. So I try to give myself perspective because I want to have 6 books on the market tomorrow. And in the Facebook book group, you guys would like those 6 books on the market tomorrow. I physically can't do it. Like, I'm trying to hire somebody else to help me do it, but I can't move this process very much faster because I physically have to write the books. We physically have to get them edited, and then I have to record audio. It's going to take 2 years. So when I get overwhelmed like that, when you look around your house and you go, oh my gosh, I've been organizing for 6 months and it's not organized, and I tell you to go back and look at your pictures that you took when you first started the challenge, I always tell you when you start the challenge, walk around the house, take all the pictures of your house as a hot mess, because you are only going to see the areas that are left to be organized. You're not going to see your progress. So when you're overwhelmed, go look at those pictures and go, oh yeah, we used to not be able to walk in the kitchen and now we eat there every day. Or I didn't even know what to wear every day and now my closet is organized. Even though I still can't walk through the garage, it's okay because I'm making progress. So I said to myself, okay, 2 years from now, I want 6 books published. What did I not have in my business 2 years ago that I have today that is working and it's worth the time? Guess what? You guess what? This podcast. 2 years ago, this podcast you're listening to did not exist. It will be 2 years old in 1 month. So 2 years ago, I had not recorded my first podcast. And I remember when I started recording these podcasts, I had lists and lists and lists of things that I wanted to tell you about. And I was so overwhelmed and frustrated that I could not record 100 podcasts and launch them on one day because there was so much information I wanted to give you. Now there's still a whole bunch of podcasts that I want to record, but I feel like there are enough recorded that when I find someone new, I could say, oh, you want to listen to the ADHD podcast or the depression podcast or the podcast about how you blend two families when you get remarried, or start with the 40 Weeks, One Whole House podcast series. That's how these books will be 2 years from now. I'll be able to say, oh, you want this book and this book, but I don't have that now. So productivity does not come from wishing, wanting, or reading or listening about it. It comes from action. So even though I'm not making progress as fast as I want to in producing these books or whatever my next business or home goal is, I am making progress. Let me give you another story that would be more relevant possibly to everyone here. There are quite a few people in the Facebook group now who have really little kids, like 6 months, 3 years, 6 years old, little kids. And my heart goes, oh, when I think back to those years, because I loved my babies. I really did. And I had more energy then than I do now, believe that or not. But I had a lot of energy and I loved these kids. But boy, the monotony of those days of toddlers, I mean, I didn't like it then. And I'm not one of those people that's going to wish to go back to the toddler years. I'm just not. I'll hold grandbabies or something. I don't want to go back to those years because there was so much that had to be done every day. And it had to be done every day. Like, it wasn't like I could outsource it or not do it. Like, taking care of kids is a lot of work. You know that because if you go back to work, you have to hire somebody to do it all day. It's not like you could put them in a crate like you do a dog. Like, raising humans is a big deal. It takes a lot of time. But you don't say, you know, I wish that they were in college now. Like, you do enjoy the stages that they're in. I'm always happy for the next stage. I enjoy the stage I'm in. I'm always happy for the next stage. When I look at my kids today, who are 15 and 16, I go, wow, there is so much they have already learned. And I have a whole list of things that I'm working on to teach them before they become the awesome young adults they're going to be. Parenting is all about small incremental change and continually investing in these kids. And so that's a lot like this book writing. What do you want to have instilled in your kids 2 years from now? And look back 2 years ago at what they couldn't do and what they can do today and keep plodding along. You have to do the work. I mean, nobody else is going to do it. You have to do the work. So here's a good story. I think I've shared this on the podcast a while ago, but I was probably 28 or 29. I don't know if we had one or two babies. They must have been sleeping or something, or maybe it was right before they were born and I was 27. It was around that time frame. We moved into this house when I was 25. It must have been 27 or 28. Probably was before the kids were born. And the oven was dirty. Like it was really dirty. If I kept cooking in it, not that I'm a great cook, it was going to catch on fire. So I remember I was working that day and I remember coming down and looking at the oven and going, this oven needs to be clean. This oven needs to be clean. And this little voice inside my head said, it's your house. It's your oven. You have to clean it. I remember staring at the oven and going, huh, I have to clean it. Like, Greg's not going to clean it. My mom lives 4 hours away from here. I have to clean this oven. And this was before Google, sorry. So I couldn't like go Google how to clean an oven. So I'm staring at the oven, just thinking to myself, like, how do ovens get clean? I don't ever remember seeing my mom clean an oven. I just, I must have stared at this oven for like 20 minutes. I just didn't even know what to do. So I think what I did was, I'm pretty sure I called my friend Margie, and I went to the store and started looking at like oven cleaning products. So I got the Easy Off oven thing, and I came and I sprayed it down, and I think I spent like 2 hours cleaning this oven with that Easy Off oven stuff. And then I was telling someone my hilarious story and they said, why didn't you push the button? I was like, what button? They're like, you have a self-cleaning oven. I was like, it cleans itself? How does it clean itself? Like, do little Martians come out and like scrub the inside? Like, how would that work? Like, how do you get rid of the soap outside of an oven if it cleans itself? Like, I was so clueless, people. And some of you are like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she doesn't know that. Others of you are going, I have a button? I didn't know I had a button. You have a button. Okay, so it's a self-cleaning oven. So what you do is you push this cleaning button and it heats it up to like 500 degrees or something crazy, and it burns off everything that's inside of the oven. And when it's done, the oven is clean. I do this all the time now. It drives my husband crazy. He hates the smell of it. And I'm always like, oh, the oven needs to be clean. Boop, push the button. It takes like 5 hours. But here's the thing. I had to clean that oven. Like, I put it off for a while until it almost caused a fire. And I had to figure out how to clean that oven. You have to figure out how to be more productive because nobody is going to do it for you. So we need a quantum leap in our thinking about time, because right now you're probably just more stressed out thinking, great, now it's all up to me. I'm not allowed to make excuses. I have to stack tasks. I don't even know what my tasks are that I'm stacking. She didn't give me any information on that. And you're overwhelmed, but I want to give you two pieces of information that are going to help you a little bit more. I know it's frustrating, but I need you to marinate on this podcast and really let your own brain do some thinking before I give you practical to-dos, because you know how I am. I'm not just going to give you all the practical to-dos because then you won't be able to extrapolate when you're in a situation that I haven't given you the practical to do for. Just like this book I'm writing. I'm not giving all the answers of how to organize your house. I want everybody to realize what phase of life they're in and what phase of life their parents and kids are in so that they can understand where people are on this organizational journey so it makes more sense and you're able to come up with your own ideas on your own. So two books that totally changed the way I look at time and productivity. The first one is called 168 Hours, You Have More Time Than You Think by Laura Vanderkam, V-A-N-D-E-R-K-A-M. Just Google, You Have More Time Than You Think, Laura Vanderkam. She's also written, I've read everything she's written. I love her. She's also written What Productive People Do on the Weekends, or I Know How She Does It, like How Working Women Get Things Done. I just love everything she writes. And she is a productivity expert, I think, or time management expert. I don't know. She's awesome. Read her. So when I read this book, 168 Hours, You Have More Time Than You Think. We are moving from the industrial age into whatever the new age is going to be called. And in the industrial age, when we move from the agricultural age into the industrial age, in the agricultural age, people got up when the sun got up and they worked in the fields all day and then they went to bed. And when the industrial age came around, they created factories, they created systems, they created, they realized that you could make one car in 42 days, or if you had 42 people working on each part of the car, you could make a car every 2 days if you did it in a factory type setting. But in order to get that car made in 2 days, that meant that everybody had to come to work at the same time and be working at the same time so that the cars could move down the assembly line. And that is where factories came from. And that is where our 9-to-5 workday came from, was from this transition from the agricultural to the industrial revolution. That's when schools came about because we needed places for the kids to go and they needed to learn the skills in order to be part of this factory economy. And so schools run on the same timetable as factories do because everybody gets up, they go to work 9-to-5, kids are 8-to-4, and then they get used to working these 8 or 9 hour days. That didn't exist before the Industrial Revolution, okay? And because of that, when people went back to work, if they didn't do school, they did daycare. And then there's summer camps. And our entire society is based on the idea that we work from 9-to-5. That's not in this book, but that's another side note. So then Laura takes the idea of 168 hours, you have more time than you think. And she says, look, from, Monday morning at 8 a.m. until the following Monday morning at 8 a.m., there are 168 hours in your week. How are you going to use those? And when she divides them out logically, and I'm just doing this from memory, if you work 40 hours and you commute 10 hours, so half an hour each way or an hour each way, let's say it's 50 hours that you're away from home for work. If you take 168 hours a week minus 50 hours, that still leaves you 128 hours a week. Now, let's say you sleep 8 hours a night every single night. So I'm going to do all this math in my head. So 8 times 7 is 56, right? 128 minus 56 is, I don't know. Let's say it's 120. No, that's not right. Okay, let's not have me do math. Let's say it's 70 hours. Just go with me. So you have 70 hours. So other than working and sleeping, you have 70 hours during the week. And the way she said it, I thought, oh, wow, that's a lot of time. Now, according to the Pew Research Institute, it takes 28 hours a week for home maintenance, laundry, dishes, grocery shopping, cutting the grass, taking care of the kids, all that. So if you're a single woman, you have to do all 28 hours. So let's say you are. Let's take 70 minus 28. Now you're down to 32 hours. You still have 32 hours every week unaccounted for time-wise. Now, I'm not saying we're robots and we have to use every single hour productively. And I do watch 1 to 2 hours of TV a day. So let's take that into it. 1 to 2 hours a day. Let's say 2 hours a day of TV times 7 days is 14 hours, 28 minus 14. I still have 14 hours a week unaccounted for in my time. That's enough to start a part-time job, to start working out every week, to read 3 more books, to whatever it is. Read the book. She's much better at dividing out time than I am, like on the fly. But basically, she got me thinking outside of this 9 to 5 time blocks. Like, if you're so used to the way things have always been, here's how it used to be. I would get up, I would do what I needed to do. Greg would go to work, the kids would go to school. I would work during that time, the kids would come home. I would do the after school activities with them and dinner. Now it's 7:30. We're done at 7:30. We don't go to bed until 10:30 at night. That is 4 hours at night. And I started to realize that I piddled away all of that time because it wasn't work time. It wasn't house cleaning time. I would watch TV, or I don't even remember what I did during that time, but I wasn't very productive with it. And I'm not saying you have to be productive with every minute of your day, but I have found that from 6:30 to 8:30 every night, I am productive. I either work on writing my book, or I read a book, or I go for a walk with the dog, but I'm conscious of the fact that I'm using this time for myself in a way that I want to reach my goals. And I don't fritter away as much time as I used to. But I hope you heard me that I watch 2 hours of TV every night. And on Sundays, I read books for a couple of hours. And it's because I've been able to be more productive and organized with my time. The other book that I read about the same time, and this was probably 4 or 5 years ago that I read these books, was the book called Tell Your Time. Tell Your Time is written by Amy Lynn Andrews, and I think it's out of print, but I'm going to contact her and see about how we can get that book or if there's a way to get that book. But anyway, the basic premise of that book and what really helped me with that book was the whole idea that she looks at time like Dave Ramsey looks at money. So Dave Ramsey is a finance guy, and he teaches you how to use envelopes for your money. So you say, all right, we have $300 this week. You get the $300 out of the bank. You put $150 in the grocery envelope and $40 in entertainment, $60 in gas and whatever. You divide your money up into these envelopes. And then as you go through your week, let's say you only spend $130 at the grocery store, you have $20 extra. You can either leave that $20 in the envelope and have extra money next week at the grocery store, or you can take that money out if you want and put it in another envelope. Like, let's say you needed more money for entertainment this week. But the idea is when the envelope is empty, it's empty. Like, you have to stop shopping until next payday because there's no more money. Like, we're not using credit cards. He teaches you not to use credit cards. Amy takes that same idea and applies it to your time. Same exact thing. You have 168 hours a week. And she talks about that as now you need to have envelopes. So you have the sleep envelope, you have the work envelope, you have the envelope for watching TV. And you go ahead and you put 50 hours in the work envelope, and you put, 56 hours in the sleep envelope, and you put 14 hours in the watching TV envelope. And you fill out your week in these envelopes time-wise. Now, how you do this is on a Google Calendar or some kind of a calendar where you go in and you make time blocks. Okay, I'm going to exercise 1 hour a day, so I need 7 hours this week for exercising. Or I'm going to read bedtime stories and do bedtime routine with my kids. I need 1 hour a day for that. And you physically look at your time as time blocks and envelopes of time. And if you decide you're going to watch 4 more episodes of TV, where are you taking that time from? Are you taking it from work? Are you taking it from sleeping? Are you taking it from reading your kids a bedtime story? Are you taking it from exercising? And this more concrete idea of time is movable, but it's not duplicatable. Like, it can't be in two envelopes at the same time, but you can move it if you want to move it. And the way she explained it, really, really, those two books, I read them at the same time, really helped me think about my calendar, think about my choices, and think about how I was using time more. All right, so that is your big productivity introduction, really a thought-provoking, how productive are you? How do you want to spend your time? I mean, that's where we should start. How do you want to spend your time? Like, if I were to give you 10 hours a week extra, like, you were going to get it and nobody else was going to get it, how would you use that extra time? And how much of a priority is it to you to have that time to use it the way you want it? Like, let's say you would use that time to start a ministry, or you would use that time to spend with your mom who's getting older, or maybe you would use that time to start a part-time home business. Or maybe you would use that time to go on dates with your spouse. How would you use an extra 10 hours a week? Sometimes once we know what we would use that time for, it helps us then to make the changes we need to make in order to have that time available to us. For a while, there was a season there where I didn't watch any TV, probably for 6 months while I was in a big growth spurt in my business. And then I added the TV back because it's actually what Greg and I do together every night. So if we don't hang out together, I don't watch TV. But if we do, we watch TV because we like to do it together. So it's not just that I'm watching TV. This is part of how I spend time with my husband. So again, I'm task stacking since I'm not allowed to be multitasking. It's not multitasking. It's not task stacking. It's how many things can, you know, sometimes one item will get multiple benefits. So watching TV is enjoyable. I like it. I also get to spend time with Greg, and it winds me down at the end of the day. There are a lot of things I get out of that one activity. So not just how do you spend your time, not just how productive are you and how many tasks can you cram into one area, but how many different things can you check off the box? Okay, I'll leave with this one story because it's funny. I realized that when I started making my to-do list the night before, or in the afternoon, if I get really tired, I'll take a 20-minute nap. But sometimes I have a lot of work to do. And so I will say, okay, I need to be writing the intro to this book, but I'm going to take a nap. Writing the intro to this book, and then I take a nap. Well, I think about writing the intro to the book while I take the 20-minute nap. And almost always when I wake up, I have a better idea of how to write the intro to that book. And I've had sleep and I have more energy. So when I go to bed at night, like let's say I'm going to be organizing, this week I'm going to be organizing a business. It's going to be really fun. I'm going to spend a whole day there. And I'm kind of auditing how they do their systems and working with their secretary for her to take on a lot more tasks to free up the two owners so that they could totally scale this business. I haven't done this before. I'm super excited to do it. So when I go to bed each night, I think about, okay, let me think about the systems that they're doing. And I go to bed. I sleep and I dream about this stuff. I wake up in the morning with ideas of how to organize homes or things I should say to clients the next day. Like my brain works when I'm sleeping. So I think it's multitasking. So when you get things in order, I don't even remember why I was telling you that. But once you know what you want to do, when you know where you're going, when you're setting your own agenda, then you can get your brain working for you while you're changing the laundry. You could be thinking about, well, how am I going to do that proposal at work while you're changing the laundry? Not in a, oh my gosh, how am I going to get that proposal done at work? But more in a, okay, I know my three big things I need to get done this week. One is that proposal. Now, let me think about it from my boss's perspective, from the customer's perspective, from my team's perspective, and really think through all those things as you're getting the laundry done. Like that's how I like to multitask, is to use those everyday tasks but actually move your goals forward. I would love to hear what you think about this productivity series, what you want to hear more of, and how you are taking action. And the best way you can do that is to get into a conversation with me on Facebook. So I've made a new link. If you go to organize365.com/Facebook, it'll take you to a page of my blog, and right there you can sign up for the Organize 365 page and the Organize 365 Facebook group. And in there, I try to do daily, I usually do about 5 days a week of Facebook Live videos. So it's whatever randomness I'm talking about, Facebook Live. You see a lot of the behind the scenes of how I'm actually productive and what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis, or any little organizational tips that I want to share with you. All right, next week, I'm going to talk to you about organizing your travel. And the week after that will be the second in the productivity series. And we'll be talking about taking the Sunday basket to the next level, Organization 102. Have a great week.